Chris Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA1977 on Twitter.
Nimmers Netter, just talking to teachers.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 3 of the Nailers Natter podcast. Been a fantastic, really busy week this week, where I've managed to record 3 fantastic podcasts. So the first of which you will hear after this short introduction is with Pritesh Raichura. As listeners will know, Pritesh is the Head of Science at McKinley Community School, and he's quite a presence and a voice on research ed conferences. So we're going to be talking to him about Kirshner, Swellert and Clark, about McKinley Community School, and about the talks that he has presented at research ed conferences, including his recent one at Durrington on dual coding. Also coming up, really excited about these two. So I have a new co-host, Mr. Simon Cox, the research school director of the Blackpool Research School, is joining me as a co-host. He's amped to my deck. And we've interviewed Professor Daniel Mers, who is the Deputy Director of Ofsted, and we've talked to him about the research papers that teachers should read. So that's a fascinating interview, and both Simon and I really, really enjoyed that. And equally interesting and equally exciting is the third podcast that I recorded with Louise Lewis, who is a research lead in Yorkshire, and we've talked about her role and its wider implications. So those two coming up very, very soon. So without further ado, over to the interview with Pritesh Raichura.
Okay, welcome Pritesh to Nailers Natter.
Hello, hi Phil.
And thank you very much for joining me this evening, much appreciated. First of all, we're going to go into the question that I'm still persisting with, despite the fact that nobody calls it this, but it's kind of the X Factor question. So it's just an opportunity for listeners to find out a bit more about you. So if you can just tell us about you, your journey to this point and your current role.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, first of all. So I got into teaching about 5 years ago through the Teach First programme, and I started my journey off at a secondary school in East London as a science teacher. And I was there for 3 years, and I became head of biology there, so I had some responsibility for developing curriculum. And after my third year of teaching there, I joined McKayla Community School, and as of now, I've recently been appointed as the head of science there as well. So that's what my current role is at the moment.
Fantastic, fantastic. And the second Teach First ambassador that we've had on the podcast so far. we're big fans of Teach First in Blackpool. I'm amongst many of my other roles, I'm also the professional mentor for various different routes into teaching, but we've had a lot of success with Teach First, and we've got some ambassadors there and some current participants. Yeah, so we're quite involved in that. So that's good to hear that obviously that program's working very well in science.
Yeah,
as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Brilliant. So the big focus of the podcast is to discuss with our listeners the one piece of research that's most influenced you. So if you could just tell us what that piece of research is, and maybe a little bit about the context in which you read that.
Yeah, so the piece of research that I'm going to be talking about is Why Minimal Guidance During Instruction Does Not Work by Kirshner, Swellert and Clark, published in 2006. So, I mean, the key message of the piece of research is that inquiry-based learning is far less effective than giving pupils as much guidance as possible using explicit instruction. And I came across it relatively early on in my career, perhaps my second year of teaching. I think it was after I joined Twitter, and that's where I came across it. And as soon as I read it in the context of several other bodies of work around the same thing, it really drove home the message that that teaching using explicit methods is better than inquiry methods. And that, for me, particularly as a science teacher, was changed the game, really changed the game for me. And that's why I think it's so important.
Definitely, definitely. So in terms of your experience when you were a pupil, was, you know, minimal guidance something that was taught to you, or did you kind of go to school around the height of, you know, flipped learning, discipline, you know, that kind of inquiry-based learning, or has this always been part and parcel of what you've experienced?
That's interesting. So I think it was quite mixed. I definitely had lots of teachers who used very explicit instruction, lots of modelling of how to answer questions and very direct teaching of knowledge. There was some inquiry-based learning that I experienced, but actually I think I was quite lucky in that a lot of my teaching did use explicit instruction. And I guess if not, then I would definitely personally always go and refer to the textbook, and was able to then and we used textbooks a lot in school where I was as well, so you could always refer to a source of information if that wasn't the case. So I think I was quite lucky in that sense, but definitely when I was training to be a teacher, inquiry-based learning was definitely pushed, and less teacher talk was definitely pushed. And I think that when you're training and you're starting off as a teacher, and that you quickly realize it's quite tricky, because when you don't guide the pupils that you have in front of you, you don't get the results that you want, and it can be quite frustrating for that reason. But it means you end up always veering, I think that for me anyway, veering towards more direct instruction. And because I was quite lucky enough relatively early on in my career to come across this paper and other bits of research, so reading Daisy Christodoulou's Seven Myths about Education, that was a big game changer for me as well, in terms of a focus on teaching knowledge over skills and using direct instruction instead of inquiry-based learning. That was particularly important for my journey as a teacher as well.
Just, I mean, to go slightly off the questions, just because I'm obviously interested in what you said there, we get this quite a lot, and I mentioned at the outset that I'm involved in sort of developing new teachers, but I just wondered your perspective on why you think it is that during ITT, or, you know, certainly early career, that those kind of ideas are prevalent in terms of, you know, less teacher talk, let the pupils... I just wonder what your perspective is on why you think that is the case.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult for me to put my finger on it and say this is exactly why, but I suspect it has a lot to do with, historically, particularly in science, inquiry-based learning has dominated the way teachers have been trained, and that approach and that thinking behind it, as, you know, the pupils, treat them as mini experts, mini scientists, seems to be very popular. It could be linked to perhaps what Ofsted has pushed in the past and what Ofsted had looked for in the past. But I recognise that that kind of landscape is rapidly changing at the moment. And I also think that for me, a big shift has been, I think a lot of people are talking about it now as well, is Twitter has meant lots of people able to go to sources and find research that is different to what has been presented by universities in the times gone by. And this has meant that ideas from cognitive science and ideas from psychology have really emerged and become very popular very quickly. So I think it is a kind of a historic thing, and I think potentially linked to Ofsted, and therefore, and then the shift when new ideas were able to spread very quickly through online social media has meant that the landscape is changing very quickly at the moment. So that would be what I think and I suspect has happened.
And it's very interesting, and it's that you mentioned about sort of social media and Twitter and other ways of that. I mean, this is the purpose of this podcast, really. It's not for people to listen to me, because goodness knows people have listened to me enough, but it's to put voices out there of people who are actively engaged with research on a day-to-day basis, actually using that in their classroom, and in your case as head of science, using that to influence other people within your school and wider, and like you said, putting that research into teachers' hands. So it is an interesting perspective. I mean, we still do get that a lot in terms of maybe some of the more university-based teacher training courses are staffed by people whose experiences, shall we say, paused at the point at which they may have set foot out of the classroom. I appreciate that's a slightly controversial thing to say, but you know, that might help it as well. But this is why this kind of thing is really important, to have sort of classroom practitioners, heads of science, important people who are in schools, saying this is what I look at and this is how I use it in my classroom and in my school. So with that in mind, back to the scripted questions. How do you go about using this research both within your classroom and maybe influencing others within your school or maybe even wider?
Yeah, so for me, I guess my journey in sort of using this research actively began at my previous school when I was head of biology. And when I was designing my schemes of work, when the new GCSE specifications came in and we were reworking our schemes of work, I changed my approach to teaching, and I changed the resources that I made so that teachers could use the resources and essentially not hide information from pupils to discover themselves, but to present all the facts, the ideas, as logically as possible, thinking very hard about the sequence in which you present the ideas and thinking hard about how explicit you make them, which allows a focus on the language as well. So one of the first things I did, inspired largely by what I'd read about some of the blogs from Michaela Community School, which is where I now work, I began to write booklets which explicitly talk through key scientific ideas and sequence that together. And my lessons always began with some retrieval practice that pupils did to remind them of key knowledge they needed to embed in their long-term memory. So my resources focused very much so on memory and learning all the fundamental facts that pupils would need to understand a concept. And I think that focus on memory is really important, because when you're teaching, the goals of your teaching shift from I want them to develop their thinking and I want them to discover things for themselves, to actually memory is really important. I want my pupils to have a really strong body of knowledge in their minds, then and because you recognize that it's only when they have the knowledge they'll be able to think critically about that knowledge and think creatively with that knowledge. When that fundamental shift happens, for you as a teacher, the goals change, and therefore your methods of delivery change entirely from a focus on skills to a focus on building schema in the minds of the pupils. So I use these booklets, and I set the department off using these booklets, where they would read the text together with their pupils, check for understanding, use lots of diagrams on the board, lots of explicit teaching, lots of teacher talk, peppered with lots and lots of questions to check the pupils are with you. And what we found was that pupils were learning and retaining loads and loads of knowledge. And the success that they felt as a result of it, there was a positive feedback loop between the success the pupils felt and the motivation they had. And I vividly remember going in to observe a teacher who taught one of the more kind of the naughtier pupils in the school in year 10. And this pupil, she was, while the teacher was explaining, she was kind of secretly working through her way all the questions in the booklet and had her hand up at the same time trying to answer the questions the teacher was asking from the front. And it was just incredible to see how motivated they were, because they were learning knowledge and they were able to access it, because nothing was hidden from them, as would be the case with discovery learning. And from then on, that's the way that I've been teaching since then. And in my current department, our entire curriculum is based that way, as it has been since the school's inception. And my school has focused heavily on always teaching from the front. And that's the way that Michaela was set up, so that teachers could stand at the front. And that's one of the key things that we do in order to secure strong outcomes for our pupils.
I'm just finding myself nodding there and just reflecting on sort of my own practice on a smaller scale. So, you know, listeners will know it, and I might have mentioned this to you before. So I am still in the classroom and I'm still teaching. I've only got two classes now compared to, I know, the timetable of a full-time teacher. But when you were talking there around, you know, the giving them knowledge, then it's giving pupils the confidence. We traditionally finished our Year 11 curriculum around about February time. And then it was a case of between February and the first GCSE Year 11 exam, it would be reteach. Now, what reteach essentially meant was that we'd go back and do everything that we'd done previously, but just a bit quicker. Whereas with advances around cognitive science and the memory stuff that you talked about now, we've done a lot more around, you know, retrieval practice, and sort of spiralling and revisiting key concepts over and again, and then modelling answers, scaffolding for some pupils. And exactly what you were saying there, which I'm nodding, we're finding the positive feedback loop that you talked about there. I had a real experience with that only today, with Year 11, looking at a paper one, biology, ready for the exam in 2 weeks today, as we speak. And just the confidence when they can pick up a paper and they've got, like you said there, the base of knowledge to be able to draw from and apply to those situations. So I hope I'm not tempting fate with this, but whereas I might have been left a little bit hollow, you know, it's wise after the event with some of the stuff that I was doing, certainly in the early part of my career, which is sort of getting on for 20 years ago now. But the stuff that we're doing now seems to resonate a lot more, and I'm seeming to get that, like you said, that positive feedback loop, and hopefully the outcome will follow there as well.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing, is that what we often fail to recognise as teachers is, although the kids in front of us are unique in terms of their personalities and their backgrounds, in terms of the way they learn, they all learn the same way, and the use of explicit instruction does work for everyone, because at the end of the day, all people sitting their GCSEs are novices in that subject, and the teachers in front of them are the experts. So it's not surprising that anyone who uses those methods will find that that the success and the motivation do stem from that form of teaching.
Absolutely. Okay, so in terms of moving it on, if that's okay with you, I talked about the fact that you're doing a lot of stuff within school, but also, you know, I'm really, you know, impressed and influenced by the work that you're doing sort of wider. And I know that you're speaking quite a lot at various different events. Obviously, you came and spoke at Research Ed Blackpool for us. Great session, fantastic feedback, particularly from our science department who came along to that as well. So that was really
That's very kind.
And I know that you were at Research Ed Durrington, weren't you, at the weekend? And you
Yes, I was.
To Research Ed Rugby. So part of this podcast, as well as sort of pointing listeners towards a piece of research, is to kind of publicise what other stuff we're doing around promoting research and evidence-based practice. So just talk to us briefly, if you can, about what kind of things you're presenting at when you go to these Research Ed events, and maybe give us a little bit of insight into what you'll be talking about in rugby on the 15th of June.
Absolutely, yeah. So in the past Research Eds, I've talked about various things from sequencing and designing a curriculum with cognitive science in mind, and so that includes the things I alluded to earlier with regards to thinking very carefully about how you're not only going to teach and impart the knowledge, but also make the links between the knowledge really explicit. I've also talked in the past about the use of when we're teaching scientific concepts, often they are abstract concepts and very generalized concepts, because that's what makes science such a brilliant subject, is that we're able to generalize phenomena so that we can apply that scientific principle in lots of different ways. But learning the abstract is very tricky unless you first start with lots of concrete examples in order to help pupils understand that concept. So I talked in some previous talks about starting with and sequencing concrete examples, but also using non-examples to contrast and to give the boundaries of a particular concept. And then on the weekend at Durrington, I spoke about the use of dual coding, so using images and diagrams under the visualizer or on the whiteboard whilst explaining a concept, and the power that an image has in not only helping pupils understand a concept, but also remembering that concept. Because if you, instead of giving people a list of 6 bullet points to learn off by heart and for them to embed that into their memory, if you were to give them a diagram with a few labels on it that showed not only those facts but the relationships between them, because you can see it as you move your eyes across that diagram, then it's a much more powerful way of delivering a schema which you have as an expert in your mind. And diagrams are a really useful way of of presenting that schema to your pupils for them to learn. And that's a talk that I'll be expanding on and in rugby as well.
That's absolutely fascinating. I saw some tweets around that you've been borrowing. I can't remember whose visualizer it was.
Andy Tharby's, yeah.
fantastic. High profile visualizer there. But what I found interesting there is that, you know, we're doing a lot in terms of next week we're looking at a launch of one of the EF's latest guidance reports around the use of technology in the classroom. And one of the key recommendations from that is kind of know what the need is before you get the technology. Now, visualizers, we've got a whole suite of visualizers, but predominantly, and dare I say exclusively, they're used for sort of modelling of exam questions. But this is quite interesting that you've moved that into looking at dual coding. So I know you've talked about it briefly there, but how do you use the visualizer as a tool to kind of, you know, help with that?
Yeah, so yeah, it's interesting because I did my entire talk on the visualizer to kind of model some of the things that I do in the classroom. So if I was to explain a new concept to my pupils, I would start by using a book, so like an exercise book that I have under the visualizer, and either showing pre-prepared diagrams, but more often drawing live a diagram that summarizes what it is that I'm saying. So an example might be, an example I gave in my talk is if I'm teaching my pupils about factors that affect transpiration in a plant, and we're looking at humidity, for example, just showing simple two diagrams with a leaf with different amounts of water molecules, water vapor in the air around them, and using that as a basis for my explanation to say how this will affect the rate of diffusion through the leaf. It means I can point at the leaf and I can allow the pupils to make a comparison between this is what high humidity looks like if you could see the molecule, and this is what low humidity would look like. This is where the water leaves or exits the leaf from. And it's far easier to understand those words if you're not only processing the verbal information, but because our brains have a separate channel for visual information, it means you can see and hear the same idea and they reinforce each other. And if I was to cover that diagram up and ask my pupils to repeat the explanation, they can do that far more successfully if they're able to remember that diagram, which is more memorable than had I just used text or had I just used words. And that, and even now as I'm speaking to you, I'm kind of with my hands pretending I'm drawing because it's just so second nature to me now, because when I'm trying to explain this, I feel like I need to show the listeners a diagram, because it just makes the explanation so much easier. And the more we do that, the better chances we give our pupils of learning and understanding, processing that information, but also remembering that information.
I did appreciate halfway through my question the irony of trying to explain dual coding on a podcast, which, you know, it's quite an interesting concept to try and get across.
It's a good challenge.
Well, absolutely, yeah. We maybe back it up with some of the descriptions in the podcast explanation at the beginning, maybe. Okay, yeah, last couple of things, Pritesh, if that's okay, because thank you for your time.
Yeah.
In terms of presentations and appealing, so obviously there's quite a wide science community that come along to Research Ed, and I know that you're within, the science strand at Research Ed Rugby. But obviously, these kind of presentations, I'm assuming, will appeal to people across a wide range of subjects, particularly with the kind of things you're talking about there.
Mm.
So if people are interested in finding out a little bit more about you, the kind of work that you're doing, where could we signpost listeners to find out some more?
Yeah, absolutely. So I do have a blog. So my blog is bunsenblue.wordpress.com. So that's where I share a lot of my talks, but also other blog posts related to teaching, curriculum, behavior, values in school, a whole range of things. I'm also on Twitter. So my Twitter handle is @Mr_Raichura. And so you can follow me on Twitter. And lastly, so I teach at Michaela Community School, and Michaela is, obviously, it's based in London, in Wembley, but we are open to visitors. So any teachers who are interested in what we're doing are more than welcome to visit. We have a policy where you just fill in a form on our website And we're more than happy to welcome visitors on a tour of the school. And you can look at some science lessons. You can come and see me teach, see me practice what I preach. So we're open to visitors. And in fact, we're even recruiting for science teachers now. So any science teachers listening, a bit of a shameless plug, feel free to apply as well. But those are the three ways that you can reach me or find out more about some of the things I've spoken about today. So the blog, Twitter, and by visiting Michaela.
Well, that is absolutely fantastic. And I may well take you up on that offer. I mean, obviously, I'm quite a distance up in the north these days, but with the work that we're doing, I do find myself in London quite a bit. Only I haven't quite got my head around the geography of where exactly I go, but I'm down there next week, for example. So I may well, seek you out and come and have a look. And what an invitation for listeners there. So we're talking about research, we're talking about evidence, and we're talking about how it can be applied in a classroom. And Pritesh is there giving you an invitation to come along and see him doing that live. Must be worth taking that up. Well, what we'll do is we'll make sure we put links to all the papers we've talked about, the links to your blog and to Michaela School and to all the other things that we've talked about there. And it just leaves me to say thank you so much, Pritesh, for your time this evening.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me, Phil.
No problem at all. And I look forward to seeing you pretty soon when I'll be down at Research Ed Rugby with you. Thanks again for your
time. Absolutely. See you soon.
Thank you.
Hello everyone, you are listening to my dad on the podcast called Nailers Natter. Follow him on Twitter at PNA1977.
What an inspiring interview there with Pritesh. And thank you, Pritesh, again for giving up your time to speak to me on Nailers Natter. All the papers that were discussed there have links on the intro to the podcast. So if you want to look again at Kirshner, Sweller and Clark, and I recommend that you do, then you can look at the link, as I said, on the introduction to the podcast. Pritesh also mentioned his blog, which again has links to that there, and the opportunity for listeners to go and visit Michaela Community School. So if you are close to there, then obviously get in touch with Pritesh and the link is on the introduction. They are also looking for a science teacher. So again, if you're interested, I've put the links there and get in touch with Pritesh through the channels that he talked about. Next week, we see the unveiling of my new co-host, Mr. Simon Cox, who is joining me for the first time in a big interview with Professor Daniel Mers, the Deputy Director of Ofsted. We talk about what papers that he would recommend teachers look at, and also with my Teacher Development Trust hat on, we'll look at what makes effective CPD and where is the research on that. The week after, I'm going to be speaking to Louise Lewis on her perspective as a research lead in a school and how she uses that role to inform the whole school's CPD programme. Okay, coming up for me with a shameless plug, I am speaking at the Inside Gov conference on Tuesday in London, and on Thursday I'm speaking at a conference in Manchester on behalf of the Teacher Development Trust on best practice for CPD. So I'll put links to those two on the introduction as well. Blackpool Research School have the launch of the EES Digital Technology, and that's on Wednesday at Leighton Primary School in Blackpool. So again, I'll put a link to the Eventbrite for that if you're in the area and you'd like to come along to that and listen to the fantastic practice that goes on at Leighton. They will be sharing their thoughts through their staff at that launch. If you're enjoying the podcast, then please like and share it. We're across Twitter and Facebook now. And just remains for me to say thank you for listening and speak to you next time.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA1977 on Twitter.
Nailers Natter, just talking to teachers.